today.
All right.
I'm going to talk to you then about voluntary benefits. You'll get this on Thursday, by the way, after you see your grades. Is it really fair to ask you to evaluate a class before you see your grades?
I've always wondered about that. I don't think it's right.
Oh, I let you see the grade. Does it help me?
No, probably hurts me.
But
it's just the way life is.
All right, so we're doing voluntary benefits, which in my opinion is one of the most important topics you're going to have during the course of this semester, because it's one of the number of things you should never, ever forget this stuff, because it impacts you, your finances, your day-to-day life, everything. So voluntary benefits are a distinctive factor between one job and another. And because of that, you want to exercise careful judgment.
Sorry.
That's okay. Just fold me over as the masses exit out the door. One of the more important things that you need to be thinking about on a daily basis is how your voluntary benefits are treating you. In particular, right, you need to be concerned about accumulation of money. This may not be something that's in your mind, but it will be over time. The accumulation of money long term as it stretches into the future, you all being, what, around 23 when you graduate? 24? Give me a number.
22.
22? Even more years. So much the better. So you're going to have, what, somewhere in the neighborhood of, not 50, but close on to 50 years to accumulate money or to buy a new car every year and put in a new swimming pool. And don't forget the 22-inch chrome wheels. It's absolutely necessity to put on your car, et cetera, et cetera. In other words, as my mother would have said, pissing your money away. But that's a quote from my mother, so don't hold it against me. All right, so what we have here is this idea of voluntary benefits. And with that, we have stuff like medical, which is not really voluntary anymore because we covered it over here. In the required benefits, I'll break that out. So we'll have a dollar accumulation. Then we want to talk something about the, let's see what else I want to put in this on voluntary benefits, sort of extras. And then in that I'll put cafeteria benefit plan, which you'll be exposed to. So this dollar accumulation really is long-term security. Et cetera. Okay. First, let me talk about the extras so I can then get the stuff that I really want to talk about.
Long-term security is another word for dollar accumulations, or is that connected?
Well, yes, but it also has to do with things like Social Security considerations, which we haven't talked to you because there's voluntary components of Social Security accumulation, too. So I sort of have to consider that as part of voluntary. You don't have to take, for example, Social Security at 66, which is what the full retirement age is now. You don't have to take it at 66, except then I'll have to just a little bit so you don't make any dumb mistakes. And 45 years from now, when I walk by on this, when my coffin is dragged by your street corner, I don't want to peer out the little knot holes in my coffin and see you there with a tin cup selling pencils, right? Wouldn't be, with your ASU sweatshirt on, Jesus, please. So, we need to have careful planning here. The extras here particularly are the idea remembering of fitting your benefits to the company
strategies,
okay, or goals. So, how can you do that? How can you figure on creating a benefit that matches the type of people that you feel you need to hire? For example, if you're focusing on younger versus older employees, what would be the difference between, what would be benefits you would offer for one versus the other? Think, what would young people want help with in terms of benefits versus what older people would want in terms of benefits?
Mortgage payments.
Mortgage payments, low mortgage interest rate loans, particularly for younger, lower interest rate loans. That could be for houses or whatever, car payments, et cetera, for example. Did I tell you, back in the days when they were trying to attract young engineers to Silicon Valley, they were giving out leases on BMW convertibles. Well, that was a nice little benefit for those folks that did that until your cars were all repossessed and sold and the company went bankrupt. But in any case, that's what they were doing to attract people. And older people, of course, are going to focus on accumulation because it's finally dawned on them, because they forgot to look over their notes from my class, that they need to start accumulating a whole ship load of money between now and the time that they decide to bow out of the employment arena. And so that might be something that's focused here sort of long term, 401s and the like, that people put money into, and we'll talk about that in a minute. Younger employees should be focused on that, but in reality they're probably not so focused on it until they get to be in their mid-30s and say, hey, I better start thinking about long term. So in any case, we tailor our benefits to try to fit the type of employee we might want to attract. And no, it's not a form of age discrimination, for example. You can also offer things that are going to be attractive to, you can think of things that might be attractive to engineers versus to people who are marketers. You're trying to attract, you know, 40 new people to help you market versus 40 engineers. You might offer different types of incentives for them to join, new computer systems or new data handling systems or whatever for the engineers, various packages and whatnot to help them do their work that they can take home and work with, or marketers might want something more tangible, I don't know. But it's up to you to think about how benefits should be offered. And because of that, we go with this idea of cafeteria plan. A cafeteria plan where the company says, let's spend $400 electively per employee. And they do that by just essentially handing the employees a right to buy $400 worth of different types of benefits. So the employee comes down this cafeteria line holding their tray and putting onto the tray benefits that are marked at certain prices. That's an exaggeration. There really isn't a line. But they make a total in their own mind of the types of things they might want to buy. They might want to buy some sort of legal insurance. Who knows? They might want to buy some sort of eye insurance, etc. Just go down this list and figure that employees are going to want to pick things that they're going to use rather than things they're not going to use. Parenthetically, however, what does this do to the cost of the benefit for the company? If everybody that buys insurance is going to use the insurance, what's it going to do to the premiums?
Raise
them up, of course. So the companies have to figure in that this is an expensive benefit. But do employees like it? Of course they like it, because they get to pick special things for them. You know, there might be, for example, if you know you're going to have a child, you might want to have a benefit that allows you to have a private room in the hospital at X number of dollars over the normal cost, et cetera. Are you going to use it? Sure. So naturally, the premiums are going to be driven up for that, but the employee feels, well, better about using that benefit because it fits them for what they need. So cafeteria plans, I recommend. but bearing in mind that they're expensive. But it does allow you to make each employee get what they want to get rather than you guessing what they want. So the cafeteria plan here offers that flexibility if it is even somewhat more expensive. All right, so as we start down through this prep, we're keeping this stuff focused on achieving our goals. And essentially what that means is that the employees with the various skills are attracted and retained by all the things that you do, including this benefit process. As I mentioned to you before, this is fairly expensive. You know, we're talking 40% of the compensation, 30 to 40% of the compensation dollar. So it's pretty expensive. And you want to get the most use out of it that you possibly can. All right, now I can get to what I really want to talk about, this idea of accumulation of money. The idea of accumulation of money is that you put aside money in general, put aside money on a tax-free basis. In other words, the money has not yet been taxed. So you're putting together a ton of money as you go along. What difference does it make, Dr. Fox? They're going to get it all eventually. Yeah, they are, no doubt about it. But let's say we're talking about $1,000 that you want to put into your retirement. Which way do you want to put it in? Do you want to put it in as $1,000? Or do you want to put it in at, let's say, $800 if you're going to be taxed 20% dollars? And this would be taxed at the end, right? At the end, you're going to be taxed when you pull it out of your retirement fund and start to spend that money 40 years from now. You're going to be taxed at 20%. Do you have any answers for me?
The inflationary rate would make the value of the money go down.
That's certainly true, which is something you need to keep in mind. Inflation is something that you always need to be thinking about. And I'll talk about that when I get to the rule of 72. But what's happening here is you're putting 800 in versus 1,000 in. It's accumulating, and then eventually you're going to have to take it out at this one, you know, 20% less, and this one as it stands. This is essentially what Roth does. The Roth IRA accounts are put in and taxed as it goes in. After that, you never have to pay it. It's just done. And in my opinion, you're better off at the first option, though people that argue for Roth argue a different option. It just depends on how you feel about it. But it's something that you need to think about as you get into this idea of 401 plans. Or sometimes 403 if you're working for a government agency. But 401 plans, which refers to the tax code, of course, 401, means that you are accumulating money with the help of the company. In a 401, the company puts in I think it's up to about 6%, maybe a little above 6% now, with a big if you contribute. And they will, you can be maximizing this company contribution of 6% if you're contributing at least 6% on your own. So what's looking, this is in the ideal setting. There's some companies that don't contribute anything. That's the one that you need to quit ASAP and get on to somebody that does supply money. Here at ASU, they give us, it's about 6.15 for 6%. So they give us more than we put in, which is pretty nice, too. So what you want to do is to be sure you take advantage of this. If you're waiting for a midnight call from me to harangue you about how stupid you are, you'll be sure to do this and contribute nothing. And just go ahead and kiss the whole damn thing off. Oh, it's too complicated for me to figure out how much the company's going to put in, right? You can expect a phone call that night with me ranting at you about your ignorance. Don't do this. In any 401 situation, contribute. It's tax-free. It's bang for the buck. Plus, you get company money as well. So essentially, if you're making $100,000 a year, we're talking about you setting aside, whatever, $12,000 a year. Pretty good deal, huh?
Neither one of them is taxed, and they're both, they're both taxed.
Well, the company's putting in 6%, that goes in straight. They write that off the bottom line of their profits. So it's easy for them to do because they take it off
their
profits.
That goes in the Roth and the other plan, right? Like both of them?
Well, when you put, this isn't the way it would go. Your money here would go directly into the Roth, and they would tax you.
Okay.
This just goes directly in, and eventually, I don't know how that works, actually, because I'm not on that side of the picture. But, the companies, no, sorry, I circled the wrong one here. You contribute, and it's taxed at 20%, let's say. The company's money, it seems to me like it goes in directly without being taxed ever. But is that possible? It doesn't seem possible to me. So you put in 6%.
$6,000 a year, and then they put in like $6,000 as well.
Yeah. So you can see the advantage of that. If you don't put anything in, they're going to be equally generous and put nothing in as well. So what we're looking at here then is the difference between having a fair amount of money accumulated and selling pencils on the corner while I watch you through my coffin.
Did the tax rate never change?
The tax rates will change as you earn more.
I mean, how you're saying, for example, right now it's 20%.
That's just using that as an example. That'd be somebody who's making not a lot of money. So it rises to about 30%, 32%, something like that. 28%, something like that.
You'd be better off using the Roth, though.
That's the argument. The argument is that you're better off, but you'd have to do a long-term calculation of that. Instead of being $1,000 a month that you're putting in, you're putting $800 in. Do that long-term, and I haven't done it, but do it long-term and see how it works out. What's better for you? My belief is having the full money working for you over that period of time and then tax at the end is better. But I never really had to think about it because when Roths first came out about 10 years ago, they said if you're going to retire in 10 or 15 years, don't bother. So I never bothered.
Tax deferral is always good.
Pardon?
Tax deferral is always good.
That's what I say. So, but in this Roth situation, they want you to roll over roll over your 401s into a Roth plan.
So is it just you paying the Roth plan? I'm so confused on what that is.
The company's still going to pay into it.
You're going to pay into it, and then you're going to roll it over, basically.
The difference between the two is with the top one, you're putting in $1,000, and that's what's going to
accumulate
interest and stuff, whereas with the second one, you're putting in $800.
And you don't get taxed at the end.
Yeah, but basically with the Roth, what you're going to be betting on is the fact that as normal or as time shows, interest rates will rise, and they'll change the law or something, and they'll increase the amount.
It could easily be.
Yeah. That's what you're meant to get.
The government wouldn't have done it if it was easy.
Yeah.
And they think that there's they think, again, that there's a better odds that they're going to make out on this than you are. So, but I just kept it the way it was, and I'm happy with that. Plus, of course, aside from this, you can accumulate money on your own in an individual retirement account, IRA, right, that you ought to max out, which is about, I think, around $17,000 a year that you can put into that. So my advice is pack this stuff in ASAP. That means starting now. The more time you have for it to accumulate, the better off you are. Now, I once used to give lectures on how to make $1 million, which basically for students was to don't buy anything expensive until you're 32 years old. And everything that you have put into this and live on peanut butter sandwich in your parents' basement. Then at 32, you can let all hell bust loose because you've got a fair amount of money chucked away. And I sort of continue to hold that thought, but it's a little bit of an exaggeration still. Okay, so from the point of view of doing this then, you're accumulating this money for long-term benefits. Now, let's talk about a little bit more about the idea of Social Security as well. As you know, Social Security is accumulating in your name roughly 7.5% from you and from your employer or 15% from yourself, and this is accumulating over time and going up in value. And the full retirement age at this point in time is 66, and by the time that you're my age, God help you, you'll be in your, it'll probably be in the early 70s. The question is, when should you retire? But here's the thing that I'm having enjoyable time with here. Are the regular Social Security, the way it's written now, allows you to not retire at 66 and instead continue to accumulate the value. This value here is accumulated at 8% a year. Increase 8% a year. So let's say, well, in my case, I was supposed to get at 66 about $2,200 a month, but I'm now going to be 70 in a couple months, and because I waited to 70, everybody with me, right? Because I waited to 70, I'll get $3,100 a month instead. Now, that's a pretty damn good deal.
So are you retiring when you turn 70?
I have one more semester to do next fall. So what happens here is the longer you can wait to pull it, the better off you are. Everybody's saying, shit, I should have taken this thing. What we're looking at here then is to accumulate more, and do not, for goodness sakes, take it at 62, which you're allowed to do. But think of the loss you take in terms of long-term survival. The general consensus is that you're going to run out of money if you start taking Social Security too early. And if you wait, you'll be very much closer to success. So the failure rate at when you start taking Social Security, this is without thinking about the money you've set aside through a 401 or IRAs, but just looking at the Social Security, your chances of running out of money if you start collecting it at 62 is in the neighborhood of about 60%, 65%, something like that. On the other hand, if you wait to 70, the chances of you running out of money are like 10%. Well, yeah, I can see why they say that, but at this point there's no point in keeping working from a Social Security point of view. There's no point in continuing working after 70. They don't add to it after 70. It only goes to 70. And then you might as well start taking it because they're not going, no more money goes in after 70. No more accumulation occurs in terms of percentage. You can keep putting in if you want, but at 70, I don't even think the companies have to put in any more. You put in your money.
But if you have like exceptional genetics and wind up living a long time, if you have exceptional genetics and you wind up living a long time.
Yeah, like my wife. She and Moses are going to walk hand in hand into the grave at about 140. So that's fine. You know, that's 4 hours of exercise a day and blood pressure that sets off the alarms at the hospital because it's so low, and heart rate that drops. I told you, didn't I? When we were at the hospital, she's trying to fall asleep, and I'm sort of in that little chair sort of trying to, the damn alarms keep going off. Alarm, alarm, the nurse runs in, blood pressure too low. I said, she's falling asleep. It's going to get really low. No, then alarm goes off again. Her heart rate's down. It's below 40. Yeah, quite normal, right? Heart's beating at 38 times a minute, you know. That's really low. That's like a snake. You know, or something out in line. The heart rate is so low, it's like some sort of reptile.
Right?
She goes into hibernation. Yeah, she goes into hibernation. I have to mention that to her. Yeah, she goes into hibernation.
Will the age of 70 go up when the 66 goes up? Like when they stop putting into it?
I understand what you're saying. This way, it's obviously a space of 4 years. They could move it up, since it'll still keep you 4 years of accumulation. It would seem to me then logical that, yes, it would.
There's supposed to be scrapping it after a while.
It is going to run.
Well, when it was first put in place, life expectancy after retirement was 3 years, right? And how long is it now at 70? Well, in my case, it should be about 30 years, hopefully, but doubtful. I'm just trying to keep up with my wife. That's all. I have very small goals. stay alive as long as she does, which is essentially an impossible goal. Okay, so what we're looking at here then is this idea of thinking and planning how you're going to do this. All right, I know, I'm just a kid, Dr. Fox. Those 22-inch chrome wheels look really great. Got to have them on my 65 Buick. People rent these freaking wheels. Can you believe that? Can you imagine renting the wheels for your car?
Rent to own, not just
No, it's just rent, period.
I saw one place they did a rent to own.
Rent to own the wheels?
Yeah.
Right. The good part about that is you can sleep in the car and guard the wheels at the same time.
Have you ever been to, like, a rent-a-center? I remember, like, when iPods first came out, they had an iPod in there. You know, I think the top price for iPods at the time was $400, and that was for, like, 32-gigabyte iPod Touch. And their iPod was an 8-gigabyte, and they had it in there for $604 to buy it now. And they charge you, like, 20% interest on it.
And do you think that they're doing that for a reason because some idiot wandered in and did it? Sure. Did they take my class? No. No wonder they were idiotic. So what we're looking at here then is decisions you're going to be making long term. And I just can't tell you how much better you feel when you retire if you have a whole shipload of money versus figuring out which is the best corner to sell pencils on. Right? It's a tough call, but you should be able to do that. Yeah.
Going back to the 401k and the Roth, is the average return the same, like the yearly return?
It would depend on how it was invested, but given that they were invested in the same thing, sure. Now, if you have 401k money, you're very much limited. Like here at ASU, I was really tightly limited in what I could invest it in. Usually things like mutual funds were okay, but if you wanted to take a flyer in some random stock, you weren't allowed to do that. So where they would have a list of things that you were, so you would go to Fidelity and you'd say, well, what should I invest in? And they would limit it to various mutual funds, usually things like inflation-protected bonds and treasury things and whatnot that were extremely conservative. So, yes, you're limited.
And not usually very high returns, probably.
Well, that goes by definition, yeah. Conservative. So from that point of view, the answer is no, they're not going to be invested. But if they're invested in the same thing, you could then sort of look at that. I mean, what is the average return you might expect if you're investing the money yourself versus conservatively through some sort of fund? Be interesting comparison. And that's probably why people are doing that. They think they can outguess the market. And the reality is you're not going to. Extremely. Pardon? Yes, you do. And if you're going to try and time this, you're not going to make it. Oh, I'll only invest when the company's low, then I'll sell when it's high. You know how many other people have had that brilliant idea? Everyone. And they've all failed miserably. So timing doesn't work, period. You're just best off to put it into a good, constructive stock and just let it sit. But you're right, that return might be lower than if you could invest. On the other hand, it might be higher than if you tried to do it by yourself. So it's the risk aspect. I don't trust it. All right. So that's the Social Security voluntary part of Social Security, right, and the retirement on money issues are okay there that I want to warn you about. Oh, one more thing. I want to talk to you. How many of you understand the rule of 72?
Definitely learned, but I don't remember it.
Pardon?
Definitely learned, if I don't remember it.
Okay, well, I can help you. I can help you understand it.
So when you turn 72, you can say whatever you want.
You can thumb your nose at everybody and say, get bent, right? No, that's not what this is. I'll remind you what the rule of 72 is by writing a 72 on the board. Does that help any?
Yeah.
How long?
Go ahead. I heard the how long.
Isn't it how long it takes the money to double it?
That's right.
If you divide it by.
Oh, is that a number?
Begins with an I.
Oh, interest rate.
That's right.
So you're dividing it by the interest rate. Now, why is this useful? Because it gives you real insight into what's happening. Because, for example, and it'll start off in a very blunt way, if you're getting 10%, your money's going to double in.
7.2 years.
Yeah. And so we're talking about you're starting off at $1,000 at time zero. After the first 7.2 years, this will now be two, right? And on it goes. So you can figure now that you're going to graduate at, what did you just tell me? I forgot. 22?
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to work to your 72. That gives you 50 years, right, to look at doubles. Well, you could get how many doubles in 50 years out of this? Well, there's one at 7.2, then we go
just
to whatever. You can see that there's X number of doubles in there. And as you increase your return, which is to say, in many cases, increasing your risk, don't forget the risk. It's just not about tons of wheelbarrow loads of money being dumped in your lap, because there's a risk as you go along here. But the money doubles as you move along. And that's the importance of investing early, 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 damn early, right, at whenever you retire. When did you say you retire? 22? No, you're starting at 22. So you want to invest as much as possible early on. Okay, that's one sort of easy part to think about. What's the reverse of this? The reverse of this is not how quickly your money doubles, but how quickly your money becomes, what?
Half.
Is that what you said? Good for you. It's half indeed. So if you have an inflation rate of 3%, how quickly does your money lose half its value? 3 into 72 equals... do you need to take your shoes and socks off to work on this problem? What is the answer? 3 into 72. So your money loses half its value in 24 years due to inflation. Now, if you need to add another tattoo, I would encourage you to add this tattoo, that your money loses buying power at 72 over the inflation rate. Why is that important? Because it means that you have to plan for the fact that the money you're putting away is not going to have the purchasing power that you think it's going to have. Plus, it's going to get taxed if you run it through a great straightforward, right? Where you're going to lose 20%. Yeah?
So that 10% you have there, is that taking into account the 3% inflation or
not? No, I'm just giving that as a raw number. Let's say you've invested in a stock that, in general, I've been watching one stock for almost 30 years now, and the return is habitually, there's some down years and some up years, but habitually averaging in the neighborhood of 10 to 12%. The best stock I know of, if I've ever put it in stock again. So that's the raw data, but inflation is taking away X percentage of that, whatever it is, whatever inflation has been over the last 10 years or 15 years, whatever. And what it's going to be in the future. So that gets taken off the top. In terms of purchasing power, do you see what I mean?
Yeah.
If not, you won't see the number. I mean, you don't go out and take the money out and say, wow, I thought I was going to have $12,000, but I really, I thought I was going to have $12,000, but I have $15,000. I thought inflation was going to take $3,000 out. It doesn't. It takes it out in purchasing power, you know, what you can buy. I told you, didn't I, about cars in my life? My parents bought me, when I was 17, a Porsche convertible. I was hot shit. It's the only thing I had going for me. I'm not kidding you. Except that car. And it was cooler than hell, right? You know what it cost? $4,000. 1961. $4,000. What's that car worth now? Well, the car alone, that same old car, is worth about $140,000 now, right, in terms of antique value. And new Porsches cost, as you know, $60,000, $70,000. That's inflation.
Yeah.
It's other things too. It's technology.
People that invest in shoes. They don't believe
it. Invest in what?
Shoes.
Shoes? Well, some people do. I've heard about this.
I know this guy in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and he bought kid size 5 Jordan for $10 that he sold him on eBay the other day for $150.
Yeah, but he knows what he's doing.
No, he didn't. He didn't, because I was helping him sell them.
How many years did it take?
It's literally like,
not
he
one,
had them 6
one.
Years. 2001, wait. Yeah, no, 2005. So what, 9?
That's
yeah.
Pretty good. I mean, it's a good return, but unless you make a special... I had a Japanese kid that was doing exactly that. I went through this program here at ASU, and the whole time the kid's getting, like, zeros on all his quizzes and generally screwing up. Why? Because he's spending all his time packaging up sneakers he bought, sending them back to his friends in Japan, right? Said, Jesus, Koji, or whatever his name was.
There's this guy that works at a nail salon or whatever in Boone, and he comes in a sunglass hut and buys all the sunglasses on clearance. And then sends them over to his brother in Korea, and his brother in Korea sells them for like 3 times as much.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't care as long as he buys glasses, but...
I can't explain it. But, and you probably can do okay, but I would recommend that as a sideline, rather than actually hanging your entire future hat on this thing. It's maybe a little risky. But my point is, when you calculate for your future, build in for inflation, because it's going to be that much more expensive, a lot more expensive. So just be careful about this stuff. All right. So now I have about 20 minutes to talk to you about discipline. But then we can concentrate on Thursday about everything. It's the last topic I really want to hit because you're going to have an understanding of this topic in order to... make it happen. The concept of discipline and termination, of course, has changed substantially over the years, and I've written about it a fair amount, but I'll try and trim it back down. What we're looking about here in terms of discipline is the idea of what? What is the idea of disciplining?
Forcing good behavior.
Well, you're not going to discipline a person who has good behavior.
It's like a defensive for bad behavior.
Pardon?
Like a defensive for bad behavior.
I don't want to use the punishment, and you're sort of getting on to that. And I don't want to think about a punishment. It makes us feel good, doesn't it, just to fire people at will? I feel much better at the end of the day if I fired 4 or 5 people. I don't have to kick the dog, right? I just have fired 4 people, and everything is right with the world, right? So I don't want to think about it like that. What I want to think about it is that disciplining is a corrective process. The idea of steering a person back onto the track that they need to be on. So discipline is a change agent, right? A change agent that allows you to call attention to the poor behavior, whatever it might happen to be, that needs correction. And by and large, I recommend that correcting an employee's behavior should be completely obvious to the employee why this thing is happening. First, they should understand, there needs to be understanding of why. Why are they being disciplined? And point two is that this is not seen as a punishment. In fact, the boss loses the thrill of punishing people and instead puts in place something that encourages correction. The idea of encouraging correction. It's really something to call attention to. And for example, then, if you're going to suspend an employee, and this has been litigated, it's been written about, on, and you're not going to believe what I'm telling you. But if you suspend an employee for some period of time, let's say because the person's perpetually late, you've given the warnings, we'll talk about progressive discipline here in a minute, but you're going to tell them that they're suspended from work for a week. Now, what's the first question you're going to ask? Does that suspension mean that they do not get paid or not? Mostly people would say, of course they're not going to get paid. This is supposed to be punishment after all. But the reality is they should. Why? Because you want to demonstrate to employees that even though you're taking this drastic action, you're not punishing them in a way that's harmful to them. If you tell an employee they're suspended for a week, they're not going to see that necessarily as a punishment. They're going to say, oh, great, I get to sit around, right, and do nothing, and the company's going to continue to pay me. But if the employee has any smarts at all, they're going to say, this is a company that cares about me, wants me to correct my behavior so I can keep working there, and we'll get along much better. Mike?
Like, is there any way to cut down on trying it? Some people's personality, they'll just take it personally, like have a grudge. Like,
you bring them in and talk to them. We've, you know, in a progressive discipline process that leads up to this, in a progressive discipline process, you basically give a warning, a verbal warning, then we give a written. This is just an example. Companies change it around. A written warning, another written warning, a suspension, and then termination. So what we're looking at here is to correct behavior with a verbal warning. These should all be noted, by the way, in a personnel file. We gave Charlie a verbal warning about the fact that he's been coming in late to work two or three times every month, and it's difficult for us to carry out business, particularly in his area of the organization, when a key employee such as Charlie is going to show up a half an hour late for two or three days a month.
What's that word say?
I'm not sure. Where, here?
Yeah.
Discipline. D-I-S-C-I-P-L-I-N-E. So this is a process by which we're communicating with the employee at each step as what's wrong and what needs to be changed. And we're paying you, during this suspension, we're paying you to correct this error and realize how close you are to being terminated. The company doesn't want to terminate you. That's why we're demonstrating this by giving you this, your pay as usual, during this thinking process. We want you to realize that we want you to be here, et cetera, but you need to comply with what the job requires. And if you're not complying, then we're not going to achieve our goals in an efficient and effective fashion, blah, 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 all of which you know how to say already. So what we're looking at here in any discipline process is the idea of correction. Change, right? Change the employee to fit the required behaviors to achieve the goals. Just part of your strategy. So discipline is part of your strategy. And you have to do it in such a way that it doesn't antagonize and estrange the employee. You do not want to make an antagonized, angry employee, right? What you want is for the employee to refocus what they're doing on company-related goals. And this is not necessarily easy because you're so pissed off that the guy's constantly late that you may just, you know, blow up and be angry. But this is called being a decent manager and correcting behavior. All right. So let's just say in the worst-case situation, we have a termination here. You're going to fire the employee. Now, I need to talk to you so you don't make mistakes about how to fire employees. Number one, especially for the first 10 years of your existence in an organization, do not attempt to fire an employee by yourself. Talk to people above you, talk to the HR people, talk to the company lawyer, whatever you have, don't fire on your own. Instead, what you need to do is to take a legal approach to terminations. And there are tremendous numbers of protections for employees to keep from being fired. This firing process here is essentially a separation. So what's being taken from the employee is something of value, which, as you know from the Constitution, requires some sort of due process here, a laid out process by which a person would lose their job. So they have that protection, and it has been interpreted in a number of different ways. Let me talk to you about some of these things. First, for example, if the company sees that the employer, right, is acting illegally, they're doing something wrong, they're not taking care of the environmental considerations, they're hiring people in contrast to equal employment opportunity requirements, those kinds of things generally are protected. You can't fire these people. You can't, I don't know how far I go into this topic since I have a pretty substantial paper on this, but you can't fire people who are acting together, concerted activities it's called. If you and I and one or two other people, it doesn't matter, it only takes two, go forward to the company and say, for example, this is the case, it's too cold to work out in the factory. The heat hasn't been on. The company at that point cannot fire you because it's what's called concerted activities. It came from the fact that employees used to organize as in unions. They would, three or four of them, get together and say, let's start a union. Companies would just fire them. Well, so they wrote this law, but it's been spread out to anything that impacts an employee. Pay, safety, working conditions, whatever, all fall under this idea of concerted activity protection as long as it's two or more employees. One employee by themselves is not protected. Mike, are you going to ask me something? Okay, so they have protection under this idea of concerted, that means two or more, activity. For one. Then we have protection under the idea of public policy. Public policy is the idea that the company is doing something illegal, breaking the law. Hey, Mike, on your way home, would you do me a favor and slash the tires of our competitors' trucks? It'll only take a few minutes. You go right by about four or five of those trucks. And if you just hop out of your car, take your Barlow, jam it into the sidewall of each tire, hop out, go back in, turn the radio up, you're having a great time, drinking beer, whatever. Next truck you see there is, stab another tire. By the time you get home, you'll have done the company a big favor by, you know, knocking out four of their trucks. That'd be great. Well, if you say, I'm not going to do that, and I say, well, then your ass is fired, well, that's not legal because you're refusing to commit an illegal act.
Like what Enron did.
Pardon?
It's like what Enron did, like the people that were about to, you know, get too close to it, they would just fire. Like when they were getting too close to figure out what was going on, they would fire.
Where was this now?
Enron.
Yeah, good point. I hadn't thought about it this way.
Well, I think they did threaten to fire people. Maybe that people didn't.
They would be protected in general. Now, so what we're talking about here, all of this law is called judge-made law or common law, right? These are not written in many statutes. Of course, statute violation is a protection. So if the guy says you're being fired because you're a Baptist, well, that's illegal and that'll be protected, obviously. Those are statutory protections. Statutory means legal, right? Written laws, statutory protection. But these ones up here, and there's several others, which you may have time to talk about, these are protected under the idea of common law, judge-made law. The judges say, this is how I interpret the Constitution to protect you in these particular situations. Also, there's the idea of contractual protection. If you're working under a contract for a company, the contract says it'll be, you know, you work there for 2 years and finish up your job, then you're finished, right? They can't interrupt that by firing you. You have a contract, right? You signed it, they signed it, and that's it, unless it's written in there. But usually it won't be. So we have contractual protections there. Okay. We also have contractual protections for these here. If it says here nothing about a contract, right, it won't be a contractual, it'll be common law. So these are common law, and then we have also these here.
Statutory is what?
Statutory is, it's not a contractual thing, it's just legal. But we'll put it here under common law. The statutory, I guess because the statutory, requirement involves some interpretation of the law to some degree. But in general, the law protects people under statutes, public policy, concerted activities, those kinds of things. That's why you need a lawyer to look at these things before you decide to fire people. Just don't assume that it's okay. When we had what was known as employment at will, back in the old days, employment at will, which started in England, meant that employees could quit whenever they wanted, but the company could fire whenever they wanted. That's been heavily eroded by this kind of stuff. They can't fire whenever they want, etc. So, one more thing. How many of you have taken a job where they hand you the employee handbook, you read through the employee handbook and sign the last page? Has that happened? All right. Do you know why you have to sign that last page? Do you remember?
Contract for that, like, if I dye my hair blue and they said, oh, it was in the employee handbook and you signed it, then you can actually have your hair blue.
Right, right. And also, it means they can't fire you for something that they say they won't fire you for. Let's say, for example, they say we use progressive discipline. On a hair dyeing blue situation, we warn you verbally, then we give you a written warning, a second written warning, a suspension, and then a termination. But you come in just because you're a Duke fan. You can't be a Duke fan. God. Well, you came in with your hair blue anyway, right? And they say, you came in here sporting Duke colors, which would be grounds for termination, I understand, but it's in the book, right, that they're going to give you progressive discipline here. And so you're going to say, look, it says in the book, progressive discipline for things that are in the handbook, right? Termination stuff. So, and essentially, when you sign that last page, you're essentially saying that I've read the handbook, but I'm not protected by anything in the handbook. Yeah.
So technically, every time they change, like, dress code or something like that, they have to have everyone re-sign that?
No, because what they're re-signing is a statement that says, nothing that offers me protection is contractual in the handbook.
Oh.
So you can do anything you want. So basically, you're signing that saying that I understand that everything in this book is up to what the company wants to do anyway, not subject. And also, for example, like progressive discipline, right? What happens if they claim they're going to use progressive discipline and a guy brings in an AK-47 and starts shooting holes in the roof, right? Joe? I need to give you a verbal warning about bringing a fully automatic weapon to work. I'm going to put that in your file, but we'd really appreciate it if you don't bring that in. Next day, there he is again, shooting out Christmas tree bulbs on the tree, which my father was very big, my real father was very big on doing, by the way, much to my mother's consternation. No wonder they ended up in divorce. But, right, so he brings in the AK-47 and starts shooting up the Christmas tree. Joe. Don't you remember I talked to you about this yesterday, and you said that you wouldn't bring it in anymore? I'm going to have to give you a written warning, etc. So you can see that right there, the idea of use progressive discipline is going to be undermined. So the company can write it in, we reserve the right to use other methods, or they can say, well, you signed off on the back saying that there's nothing in the handbook that implies a contract, and that's really what you signed. There's nothing that they're required to do, even though they say they do it. Do you see what I mean? So, it doesn't offer you the protections you would think it offers you. One other thing that I want to be sure to tell you. When you're talking to an employee and you're the supervisor, things that you say to the employee can be held as a verbal contract, folks. So if you say, you know, and this was a case again, you'll stay on here as long as you don't steal from the cookie jar, right? And then a couple years later you say, well, we have to lay people off and you're the most recent hire. That employee can indeed say, I was told that I wouldn't be fired unless I was stealing out of the cookie jar, and I haven't been. That's been held as a legitimate reason for not being able to fire somebody.
How can you prove that?
Especially in this case that I'm talking about, the guy was dead that said these things. But all the coworkers said, that's just the way old Joe was. Joe was just wanting to be so pleasing and happy and make people that he would say things like that, and that was upheld. So be careful about what you say and what you write. We, in a letter, you know, we want you to work here. We want you to know that almost everyone is probably going to be promoted within a year, right? Be careful there, because that's the kind of thing in which a person comes on to work for the company, and they say, well, I came because I understood I was going to be promoted within a year. Yeah, but you're a total loser. Well, I don't care. It was in the letter. I'm getting promoted. No, you're not. We're going to fire your miserable elbow. Well, no, but I was told I'd be promoted. It's in the letter. You know, that could stand up in a number of courts.
So it's probably stronger for letters than written.
Pardon?
Stuff. It's probably stronger for written stuff, I'd assume, right?
Yeah, but verbal also has support. So be careful about this. All right, I'm sure I've missed something really crucial, but what the heck. We'll still go over this Thursday with grades and all that kind of garbage. Teaching evaluation, yes sirree, sharpen up your pencils.
Your class got thinner.
Huh? Golf. What? Or it can take points, so you can hurt your health.
Instead of 400 points this class, you get 500.
I want to make sure I understand how I am.
Yeah. Read the back. Do you have the back page?
Then you've got to
tear it off.
Then you get
400 points. Yeah. I'm actually a supervisor today, so I have to do it all the time. We don't, like, they're separate, you know what I mean? It's like a form and then
well,
it's
where?
But so,
so what you're saying is that nothing in this handbook applies to contracts. Oh, thank you. Nothing in this handbook applies to contracts, which, if the employee is sharp enough, means nothing in this will protect you.
Okay. So,
nor can it be used as a protection.
So it only protects the employer, then?
Right.
How's your dad doing there?
Okay. Well,
yeah.
It keeps in place the idea of employment at will from the employer.
Right. But does the employer, have the right to not sign it?
Table to walk in?
Yeah, sure, they don't mind not being hired.
They're
going to renege on it.
Yeah, that's not helping a walker.
But
I'm sure
you
he'll
have access
get some like contract or physical therapy.
You'll see on there.
Probably for a couple months.
Nothing in the handbook implies anything but an employment
and
violation.
Man. How
which
you
means you decide to break the relationship.
It was good, man.
He's
still lost stuff in the
Definitely.
I mean, that kind of helps.
But
I really like
it makes you appreciate
it.
Those perceptions.
I remember that day when I said you had that first
thing. I was like, I thought you were going to die.
Yeah, it's crazy.
I haven't looked at it in probably 2.5 years.
It's worthwhile looking at it.
Take that for granted.
And if you want, bring it in. I'll talk to you about it. It's really interesting. I've written a lot on it.
Yeah.
Cool. I mean,
sitting over winter break.
That's what I was gonna do.
I'm down, man. We need to
look at
the hang out.
Heck yeah, we've been too busy.
I can't wait.
It'll be a quick transition.
I can't wait.
Yeah.
The
argument that
I know. I can't
wait
either.
We're relaxed.
We did a really good job. Yeah.
On your paper.
Yeah.
We're doing good.
Yeah. I feel like it's gonna be.
What I'm asking here is,
we put like a lot of work.
What are the limits of domestic abuse? Can you punch out a dog, but you can't punch out your fiance?
It depends what my grade is. If I have a B, then I'm not.
So, what I'm saying, how about, but isn't this interpreted by some people, let's say your boss is a monogamist, doesn't like women,
I'm not gonna ask.
Right? And he's a dog lover. Could that rule then be changed?
Good.
You'll get fired if you punch your dog, but not if you punch your fiance.
Good job on that.
Domestic abuse is
something else. I know. But it's all subject to interpretation. And to that, it needs to be more carefully explained. You did okay in the paper, didn't you? What'd you get? 80-something?
Where's this coming? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, that's what I'm talking about, is to understand. But what if the employee is accused of dog abuse or theft or blank, 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 blank? A bit of generalization from abuse to other violator situations will help. But remember, violator,
would help, like,
I'm not saying interpretation of law violations. I'm talking about boss or owner violations. In other words, something they don't want.
Regulation based on what the employer
would want or not want.
Right.
And so it needs it to be a pretty wide open thing, since especially a lot of these employment relationships are at-will relationships. In other words,
absolutely,
no contract.
Okay.
So that's what I was looking for.
It sounded like you wanted us to almost take it farther than what the article was.
At least to acknowledge this issue, that this idea of firing people for domestic abuse is subject to the boss's interpretation.
100%.
Which is weird. I think it's weird.
Right.
Especially if you're going to fire somebody in a sort of inexplicable
yeah.
way. I mean, look what happened to Michael Vick for abusing dogs, for God's sake. And he got his ass kicked out for a couple of years.
Yeah, they,
and Ray Rice came
they
back
tore him
after
up.
Hitting his wife.
Right.
Well, that's
what
her heart finds out.
She stood by him, and I think it's she'll be sorry. But we'll see. Maybe she'll collect big time when the divorce comes along.
I don't know. They may have something to bring up.
Who knows? Who knows at all? But Michael Vick's a perfect example of a society that condemned his action, but it's well below what a lot of people are still kept on the job for.
Right.
You know, I mean, somebody says, "Well, one of my stockbrokers defrauded some old lady," and it's not very obvious, but it happened. Now we're keeping him on because he's a great salesman, etc. So there's a lot of subjective interpretation going on here. And
right.
So you did well. It's one of the higher papers for sure, and also pretty interesting, which was helpful.
Do we hold on to this?
Yeah.
Okay.
Did I already
put it on
in?
My fridge? This is probably the best grab I've gotten in college.
Really?
No.
Put it on the refrigerator.
That's what I'm planning on doing.
You handed that in. That's not an early paper. That's a regular paper. So.
We did horrible on ours.
What was it?
Test driving employees before hiring them.
Well, why did you give me that stuff about the New Zealand law?
I didn't write that.
Whoever gave you that took you out the wrong path. I'm reading the thing I see, this Employment Relations Law, 2000 or 2002, whatever. I say, Jesus, am I senile already? I haven't heard anything about this goddamn thing. I better look it up and see what it says. How did this get by me?
Yeah.
And so I looked it up, and it said New Zealand. In fact, the citation you had was from New Zealand.
Yeah.
I circled it. So that was just dumb.
Yeah, I kind of just focused on mine because it's the whole family thing. Because I really just focused on my side and I
mm-hmm.
expected everything else to be turned in right. But
well, you'll
learn
on projects.
I hate.
You
got to
run through. What'd you get on it? 70?
76. Is there any way we can improve
yeah,
that?
Yeah, I'll
that's
move it. I'll
I'm
give
at.
It to me. I'll move it up to an 80. Just
okay.
Because you're idiots doesn't mean you should suffer too much. You'll be more careful next time.
Are you going to be in your office tomorrow too?
What is tomorrow? No, Jody's going riding if the weather's decent. How's it look for weather?
It's going to look better.
Is it going to be crappy? Hang on a second.
I think the temperature is supposed to drop again. Or it might. They said it was going to be heavier, but probably like hotter.
When are your next office hours?
What time is it now? I have enough time to talk to you for 10 minutes. Hang on. Let me just see what this says. So forecast for here.
Tomorrow's supposed to be 56.
It is 56. 20% of rain.
So
there's a chance that we'll go down to Lenore tomorrow to ride, knowing Jody. She's a fanatic. Same thing, 50 degrees. No, 67 in Lenore tomorrow. So she's going to see that, and she's going to say, let's go. So chances are we'll be here tomorrow. Or if it is, it'll be better. That's good.
What am I talking about?
I had a quick question about my work. I need to go through my employee handbook again. Is that a whole situation? I want to live in my life, do whatever I want to do. Where I walk into work, and how much I need to read it before I go on with the direction. I walk into work, and I'm going to read how I'm going to go through the teacher, what I got to do, trying to let you know what I need to go.
You know, well, how Ann told us. You know, to give somebody a little bit of clout, they have nothing else. You know, what's the point of it?
Well,
one freaking day, why don't you say, we have a new dress code, we don't wear a nice shirt tomorrow.
I have to go to the handbook of my employee. This is an corporate
Well, you're not saying how many employees
are going
it's
going to
be
a couple of hours. No, but I went and I looked at it and I said, you know, I just came to work. I was actually kind of late.
Are you the
I called in and said, the traffic is horrible. It's going to be a 25-minute drive. Even though I live in the
fake articles of people saying they're students of mine. And
I can buy a lot of this.
Read that article.
So I tried to put it on well. I said, I thought it was casual. I was wearing Hawaiian.
Right.
And, you know, he just was very standoffish, and I need to talk to him about it, just I haven't had time to just, you know, and go over it. But he was like, I need to, and he's very, very talked about this, but he said, can you go? And I said, do you have a plan on this, Jack?
So you got an 82. So right here, this column here is this concept here.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sum of four components divided by four for your overall average.
Right, right.
So if you wanted to look at that, I wonder if I can copy this.
Yeah, if you drag the corner.
I know, but okay. I don't want to. I want to skip all these people. What I want to do is just put this, I guess.
No.
I wonder if I put this here. Will it change all the numbers, you know, column references?
It will, yeah.
So if I copy this, copy, and now where are you?
I am 15.
No, right, is it here?
I think so.
I do too.
If you click on it, it'll highlight over here.
Yeah. So there it is up there. Now, does it have, is it the same reference? It's not. It changed. It's 30, so it hasn't changed, because you're really... you're really column 15. So all this stuff needs to be changed to 15.
Right, but you didn't put it in there.
I thought I did,
mm-hmm.
but maybe not. So we're going to come across here. We'll just take this. Okay, highlight. doesn't give me an option to drop it. So, in any case, what you could do is just add them up.
I mean, it looks like a roughly
average creature average. So it's an 85 plus an 84, so you're still at 85, plus an 83, so you're at 84, plus a term paper of 85. You're basically 84, which is basically a straight speed.
Yeah. That works. All right, cool.
Yeah, no problem. Michael?
Hey, you told me to have questions that sound good for the final. Okay, I'm gonna have my notes.
I don't know if we have time to do this right now.
No.
I got to play us in 10 minutes.
I just got two questions.
Oh!
Really,
oh, that's
really
good.
Let me install it.
Good.
It's from the day's notes, actually.
Sorry I had to rush so much today.
It's kind of a general question, like, discipline, will blank and blank contribute? Are a large part of our company strategy, discipline, and benefit?
Well, in actuality, every topic we've had contributes. It should be, let's just say not contribute. Let's say that all of our policies and the way we do things, all the way from interviewing and selection through, you know, termination, all of those things should be looked at in order to help the achievement of our strategic goals. So we're moving toward the goals, and if you do something that's not anchored correctly, it slows down the company to get there. If you do something that's carefully crafted to help the company get there, then you'll achieve your goals on time or before time.
Yeah.
So that's what we're talking about, and it's a really good, if you, a good essay question, because I'd say, you know, how do you use discipline, for example, to help the company achieve its goals?
And I can say, like, what you said earlier about how you're really just trying to
change.
Yeah, change. But it,
change the employee to what the company needs.
More behavior.
Right. And this means that you're not venting your own supervisory, you know.
Spying on people, yeah.
Right. And instead, go forward with the idea that there's value to each employee until proven otherwise, but go forward with the idea that there's value with each of our employees that can help achieve the goals. And you do that, then you think about, you know, you think about that resource as something that you want to preserve and take care of rather than something that you want to punish. And it's so easy. The fellow I was just talking to about how you went, you know, he works at some company that sells clothing and they've always dressed casually on Friday, so he came in and the guy said, well, I told you we don't have casual Friday anymore, you should be dressed in such and such, go home and get this stuff, you know, and it's like a 20-minute drive, you know, and that's just stupid, you know, because he hadn't told the employees effectively, and so it's just stupid. Instead, what you should say is, you know, here's what we've got to plan. Our plan is to have employees be modeling the clothes that we're selling. So when you come in, pick up something that doesn't have to be folded and unfolded and this and that. You know, put a jacket on that fits you that you like or something like that, and that'll help people see what we have to sell. And that way you'll become a good salesperson just by people looking at you. That's much better than acting like an asshole, sending the guy home and missing work and getting docked for pay and blah, blah. So it's the idea of taking a resource and treating it the way you'd want something to be constructively treated. You have a car, you know, you don't pour sand in the gas tank, you know, et cetera. You take care of the car so it's going to work well for you to help you achieve your goals of getting back and forth to class or whatever. So that's what we're talking about here. In terms of discipline as well as in terms of benefits. We're creating benefit plans to help us get to our goals.
Okay, yeah, very clear.
And if you know that and you can activate that, you know, in your work-a-day world on into the future, you'll be light years ahead of most managers because they don't understand.
One of the pillars of HR.
It's the pillar of recognizing the resource that each employee represents. And we don't abuse resources because of our own ineptitude at managing and our own insecurities. You know, well, I can only be secure if I berate you and make you feel like an asshole. And so that'll make me feel better about myself. That's not the point. The point is not to make the manager feel better about himself or herself. It's for the employee to essentially get on board where the company's going.
Okay.
Which long-term helps the employee in terms of long-term, you know, jobs,
benefits, pay, promotions, pay increases, all that stuff is valuable to the employee. And they just need to have that demonstrated to them and that the company cares and wants to keep them.
They're not just a number, yeah.
They're not just a number. They're not just an asshole, even though the boss may treat them like that. The boss is the one that should be fired, not the employee, almost always.
Do you think that was like if you were in supervising and you would have saw that, you would probably...
I'd fire the boss.
Right then?
Well, no, probably I'd give him a warning, you know, whatever. But that kind of behavior should lead to termination because they're aggravating, abusing a situation, and it can only get worse. The employees get more and more pissed off. The whole culture of the organization shifts to being, adversarial, in other words, against each other, and that slows up the efficiency of goal achievement.
Yeah. It's weird how one little thing gets top of all the dominoes.
Yes, that's right. It's very, very true, because employees see it, they don't like it, people always complain about stuff they don't like, and that gets around, that, the boss told Harry off because he wore a Hawaiian shirt instead of a suching on Friday, and, he somehow didn't know about it or whatever. The boss needs to communicate better. And then if there's still bad communication, you should take a positive spin to it, like you'd be a really, you'd be a great model for these jackets here. Take a look at these jackets, how cool you look when you're standing in front of the mirror, blah, blah. You know, it could be total bullshit, but at least it's a positive spin on this rather than negative spin. Go home and take a loss, So this is the nature of decent management, and you see it at the companies that are successful, SAS, for example, Southwest Airlines, etc. There's a number of them that are just totally successful because that's how they treat employees.
I just have one more question. Thursday's our last lecture, right?
It's not even going to be a lecture. We're basically going to go over grades and whatnot. So I'll only be taking lectures from whatever, two classes or something, whatever.
Okay, well, so Tuesday will be your final or Thursday of next week?
I don't know. Whatever it says. We'll just schedule per the thing. I should look. I haven't looked yet.
So Thursday, you'll say it.
Thursday, I'll say, here's what your grades are. Look over this stuff. Check your grades against the sheets of paper you have in your notebook, your quizzes and stuff, to make sure that I got everything entered correctly. And you have a chance of raising or lowering your average based on the final. I'll explain to you whether or not how you should calculate that. And then the finals will be as scheduled, and we'll just go forward. Typically, out of any class, three people might take the final, maybe four.
Really?
Yeah, nobody takes it. Because the grades are much better than they were expecting. Because they ate shit so badly in the various exams and whatnot, and they figure that I'm an asshole, and so they're going to get a terrible grade. And in the end, they don't. And that's what's surprising to them. So, they get a B minus, and they say, oh, God, I was sure I was going to get a C, and I've got a B minus, so they're fairly happy. In general, I wouldn't expect more than three. Now, on Thursday, there's going to be five kids or six kids that say, I'm going to take the final. But when push comes to shove, they send me a note saying, I think I'll just take what I have because my parents want me to come home or whatever.
I'm a gambling man.
Pardon?
I'm a gambling man.
Well, there's wait and see where your grade is and what you'll have to achieve in order to move it.
You said if I'm at an 80.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, I forgot. Be sure to remind me of that. I have a way of forgetting these details, as my wife does. All right? We're good. Okay, good.